Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. And today is Wednesday, the 9th of April. Have you paid your taxes yet, tax serfs? I sure hope you have. I had to file an extension this year because, man, my taxes are a nightmare. It's the worst day of the year for libertarians. April the 15th, tax day coming up. What are your thoughts on the IRS? We posted a story this morning over at the Libertarian Republic about how the IRS actually, they can't even answer their phones. That is how terrible this bureaucracy is. But if you don't pay your taxes, even if they can't answer your question, well, you can bet that I'm sure that they're going to crack down on you. The enforcement arm of the IRS, I'm sure, is getting around to everybody. As for the accountability arm of the IRS, well, they'll get to you when they get a moment. But I want to talk to you today about the most important news story of the week. I just got back from Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, back to Alexandria, Virginia. And I was present for the announcement of Senator Rand Paul when he announced in Louisville that he was going to be running for president of the United States. It was a very exciting event. And there are a lot of highs and a lot of lows, to be quite honest, because, you know, the best thing about, I like to say always, the best part about working for myself is that I get to be free and independent and I can say whatever I want. I don't just have to fluff up politicians and say, you know, all these nice flowery things about them. So I'm going to give you the straight beef about what I saw at the Rand Paul rally, the announcement at the Galt House in Louisville, Kentucky. Because I did see some things that were concerning to me. I heard some things that were concerning to me. I saw some things that were concerning to me. Obviously, I was very excited. And overall, it was a positive event. But I want to give you my unbiased viewpoint about what I saw and felt there when I talked to people. I've actually got a nice little interview that I had with some regular readers of the Libertarian Republic. Some kids came up and were like, "Hey, Austin, we read the Libertarian Republic. We like your podcast, et cetera, et cetera." And they were like, "You know, what do you think about Rand Paul? What do you think about Ted Cruz?" You know, the best question I got from somebody was like, "Why do you keep saying nice things about Ted Cruz?" And we're going to talk about that here in just a moment, so I can fully explain my views better than just what I can express in writing for you. I think this is probably a better way to communicate some of these very nuanced opinions and ideas that I have for how libertarians can win. Now, when I say libertarians can win, I think that Rand Paul winning is a good thing for libertarians, but sometimes the strategy is not always an overt strategy. Sometimes we need a covert strategy. So I'm going to talk to you today in this podcast about some of the covert methods that libertarians need to use to be able to win the Republican Party. And it does involve some deception. And I want to talk about that and why I think that that deception is okay. You know, libertarians, I think we want to try and be honest with people. You know, we're tired of lying politicians. But I'll discuss more about that later in the show. First, I want to read to you a story from the Washington Post. You know, standard exciting libertarian article here. How Rand Paul Can Win. This was published on the 7th by Chris Salica. And I'm going to read this story, and then I'm going to talk to you about the event and my feelings about the event, you know, what I liked, what I didn't like, and then I will play the clip of the brief interview that I did with some really cool young kids who approached me at the rally, and we'll discuss a little bit more about the strategy of how libertarians can win, not just Rand Paul. You might have heard that Rand Paul has officially entered the presidential race. "I have a vision for America," the GOP senator from Kentucky said, kicking off his campaign in Louisville on Tuesday. "I want to be part of a return to prosperity." The announcement surprised no one, since Paul has made clear for the better part of the past 2 years that he was going to run for president in 2016. But his announcement is a nice peg to try to answer this key question: can he actually win? The answer, I think, is yes. Although to do so, Paul would not only need to overcome a crowded and talented field of rivals, but also be on the leading edge of a transformation of the Republican Party, the likes of which we haven't seen in more than 3 decades. Let's start with the purely practical considerations that make Paul either a top-tier or just off the top-tier candidate. Consider. Thanks to his father's 2 past presidential bids in 2008 and 2012, Rand Paul starts with organizations in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina that are significantly more advanced than what all of the other candidates not named Jeb Bush currently have. Again, thanks in no small part to his dad, Rand Paul is a known and liked commodity in those early voting states, a status reflected by his standings in polls in each. the committed and mostly online fundraising base that helped Ron Paul raise $39 million for a quixotic, now quixotic is quixotic, 2012 primary campaigns. But when someone says quixotic, that's basically a reference to Don Quixote. So what the Washington Post is saying here is that even though Ron Paul raised $39 million for his primary campaign, it was mostly just tilting at windmills, which is this phrase for sort of wasting your time or attacking imaginary enemies and, you know, you've got no chance of winning. While he won't raise the money of Jeb, or probably even Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, the younger Paul will have plenty to make his case to voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and beyond. He occupies space, the libertarian wing of the GOP, that no one else is even trying to fight him for. While, as the New York Times' Nate Cohen notes, the libertarian portion of the GOP isn't big enough to deliver Rand the nomination. It is big enough to form a loyal and cohesive base from which he will try to expand outward. From there, he'll go after Tea Partiers and social conservatives. That combination of traits, organization, name ID, money, and a base, puts Rand in a rarefied territory in the race and virtually ensures that he will be hovering in and around the top tier for most of the contest. The harder to answer and more important question is just how much change the Republican Party really wants. The simple truth is that Rand Paul is by far the most different candidate, in terms of his views, of anyone who will seek the Republican presidential nomination. The difference between, say, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio might seem vast, but it's not. It's almost entirely tonal and not really issue-based. I might disagree with Chris Salitza on that, but we'll get to that later. While Paul is doing what he can to hedge some of his views so as to avoid being typecast as the libertarian guy in the race, there's little question that, particularly on matters of national security and foreign policy, he represents a decidedly different direction than not only the rest of the 2016 field, but also the recent policy path taken from the Republican Party. In his announcement speech, Paul scolded conservatives who believe a government inept at home will somehow succeed in building nations abroad. He insisted, "We need a foreign policy that protects American interests and encourages stability, not chaos." He talked about the deep societal dangers of the NSA's domestic spying program, insisting that on his first day as president, "I will immediately end this unconstitutional surveillance." We'll see about that, and I'll talk about that later. None of that rhetoric will send the Republican establishment headed for their fainting couches, but the ideas that Paul has espoused that comprise the framework on which that not all that controversial rhetoric sits both A, do represent a real change in approach for a party who, since at least Reagan, has championed a very muscular foreign policy, and B, will become a major point of attack for Paul's rivals. To that latter point, an outside group aligned with Republican ad maker Rick Reed is set to launch a seven-figure ad buy in early primary states on Tuesday, hitting Paul for his alleged support of President Obama's position on Iran. And I'll just go ahead and throw in that they did, I think PolitiFact did a breakdown of the hit piece on Rand. This is the piece, I think it's about his Tom Cotton support of Obama's positions on Iran, but the PolitiFact debunked it as mostly false. There's little doubt that most Republican voters are looking for fresh faces promising change in 2016. That goes double for a race where a member of the Bush clan is running, and, to date, not getting the sort of warm welcome from voters that he and his team likely expected. Sidebar, Jeb is getting a great reception from donors. The question for Paul is whether the kind of change his candidacy promises, a non-interventionist foreign policy, domestic policies heavily influenced by the government needs to leave me alone mentality of libertarianism, is both the kind of change and the right amount of change that people are seeking. What Rand seems to be selling is this: I am different, but I'm not scary. The battle to be the right kind of change is at the center of Paul's challenge over the next year or so. If he can sell voters on the idea that the change he represents is the change they need and want, he might be a real threat to be the nominee. If his rivals effectively cast him as the purveyor of a frightening or out-of-touch vision of America, he will be one of the many cast-offs of this crowded race. That's a pretty good analysis from Chris Salitza, and it's something that we do have to take into account. Now, I did an interview while I was at the Louisville announcement, and I spoke with Carl Cameron of Fox News, who's an excellent handicapper of the presidential race. Here's what he had to say.
I just want to ask you, what do you think Rand Paul's chances are? What do you think of the audience? What do you think of Ted Cruz versus Rand Paul? Do they eat into each other's votes, et cetera, et cetera? And sort of like what your data is on that.
Well, Rand Paul's real. no question about that. He's the second candidate who's officially announced. He's obviously going to be in a Tea Party libertarian battle with Ted Cruz. Rand Paul gets the libertarian mantle. Ted Cruz has more Tea Party support. And you got to throw in Marco Rubio there as the three senators who are going to be battling against each other, and wonder how that makes Mike Lee of Utah feel to see his three best buddies all running for president and he's on the sidelines.
So do you think that Tea Party vote kind of gets split three ways, and does that give an edge to Jeb Bush?
I don't think it gives an edge necessarily to anybody. Whoever wins the nomination has got to get the most Republicans. Whether it comes from a three-legged stool or a four-legged table, you've got foreign policy conservatives, you've got American domestic policy economic conservatives, and you have the social conservatives and the traditional three-leg. But in this particular campaign, we have libertarians and Tea Partiers who are of, you know, it's a different type of campaign. It's not new. Barry Goldwater did it. Pat Buchanan did it. There have been a lot of candidates who have sort of been insurgent outsiders in the Republican Party trying to change it. That's what Rand says he's going to do. He's going to do it in a way that a lot of conservatives have issues with. His social agenda is more moderate than a lot of conservative Republicans. He thinks that things like gay marriage should be a state issue and not a federal one. While he's for traditional marriage, he's going to say it's really not up to the federal government to dictate.
So the last time around, we saw Rick Santorum take Iowa. Ron Paul, I think, came in a close second, perhaps third. And Rand Paul, you know, he could probably get it pretty high in Iowa. But do you think he needs to win? Do you think he needs to win Iowa, or do you think he can come back later and possibly win in like Nevada or New Hampshire? Like, where does Rand Paul really kind of need to stake his claim and resources early on, do you think?
In the early primary states, it's undeniable that New Hampshire is his must-win state. Mm-hmm. And it could be very difficult to win New Hampshire. While there is a very deep libertarian streak in the live free or die state, it is also very much establishment Republican state. As the first in the nation primary, they take this process very, very seriously. And Mr. Paul's accused isolationism will be a big deal in New Hampshire, and it could undermine his advantages with some of the more independent-minded libertarian voters on the right. Having said that, Rand Paul is trying to be a change agent in the Republican Party, which doesn't necessarily lend itself to winning the nomination. It may shape the party, and I think that people close to Rand Paul, even folks like J.C. Watts, is here at the announcement today and supporting him because of the communities that Rand Paul is trying to appeal to. He's looking to grow the party with minorities, and that's something that J.C. Watts has been talking about since he was in Congress in the 90s, and he's here to highlight that idea. So those are general election strategies for a Republican, not the kind of thing that necessarily plays well in the early voting states. In Iowa, 65% of the Republican caucus goers are self-described evangelicals. While Rand is a Christian, it's not part of his rhetoric on the stump, except to say that Christians are being persecuted worldwide, and he has been quiet on RFRA, the religious freedom reauthorization, and as a consequence of that absence of commentary over the last week while he's been preparing for his speech, people want to know where he stands on that stuff. Is he going to be a libertarian or is he going to be a Christian, and how do they overlap? In Iowa, it could be difficult for Rand because of that. In New Hampshire, because he is a conservative, some of the independents who might agree with his foreign policy or his positions on marijuana and some of the social issues may have differences with his desire to, for instance, gut the IRS and do away with the Department of Energy or things like that, right, that may be too aggressive for New Hampshire. Then he goes to South Carolina, where he is going to have a very strong organization, and he'll be strong there. But New Hampshire is really the place he has to do well. In the old days, we used to say that Iowa winnows the field to maybe 3 to 5 candidates. New Hampshire cuts it down to 2, and then South Carolina picks. Now, because of super PACs and the internet, they can go a lot longer. Rand Paul could be in this race for a long, long distance, whether or not he wins the nomination, because of the way the calendar is and because of the new political campaign trail.
Great. Carl, thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy.
Have a good one.
All right, so you heard what Carl Cameron had to say. Rand Paul is the real deal. He's running a real campaign. He obviously has an actual chance of winning, which we never saw, of course, when his father was running, which I didn't really care. I wanted to do the right thing anyway. I think that you have to do the right, what you think is right, even if you think the chances of success are infinitesimal. Now, infinitesimally small. When it comes to Rand Paul, I think supporting him is the right thing. Now, I'm going to talk to you about the things that I saw at the Rand Paul rally that I thought were good things. I thought that, you know, it was exciting that we had so many new people, and there were hundreds and hundreds of new faces. Whenever I was at the Ron Paul rallies, of course, I almost recognized everybody, because even though we would have large rallies, you know, by the time that, you know, I'd been campaigning for, you know, 5 or 6 years for Congressman Paul, you know, I pretty much recognized everyone. But now that Rand Paul is running, and he's running a credible campaign, he's much more powerful as a senator, we see a lot more people at these rallies, which is a good thing and a bad thing, you know. And the reason why, you know, I think it's, I guess it's not a bad thing. The thing that was off-putting to me, and I said this yesterday on my Facebook page, but I guess I just felt a little bit, what's the proper wording for this? Just unease when I saw all of the conservatives, and when I say conservatives, I mean true conservatives, you know, swarming all over Rand Paul and all over the event. And, you know, we libertarians, of course, we always knew we were a minority. And I guess I get the feeling sometimes, the same feeling that a lot of libertarians get when you see, like, a movement that you helped grow, you know, explode far beyond, you know, larger than yourself or, you know, our small little band of freedom fighters. You know, and this is what we wanted. We wanted mainstream acceptance. But, you know, a lot of these conservatives, you know, where were these guys when we were fighting in the trenches? You know, we libertarians, we Tea Partiers, we were like the Marines, you know. They sent us in to do all the grunt work, and now the Army's come in, and they're fighting the battles, you know, after we've already, you know, cleared out the Taliban. But, you know, the reality is that we need to grow. We need to have a larger movement. And so I have to say that feeling that I have, it's irrational. It's illogical. You know, you have to understand that when you have a mainstreaming of philosophy and ideology, and it becomes a political movement, a real political movement, a mass movement, you're going to have a lot of people there that aren't going to be that hardcore radical sect, the ideologues. You know, we are the spearhead, we freedom fighters, you know, the real libertarians. You know who you are, the people who listen to my show, the people who would listen to this, you know, crazy libertarian podcast guy. You know who you are. You're the vanguard, you're the spearhead. And so I guess I felt a little uneasy because I just saw a lot of people who look like traditional conservatives, and I felt a little bit like a freak, you know, like a little freaky, like I was sort of wearing like mainstream clothing on the outside, but I just didn't want them to know that I'm secretly a freakish libertarian. So I kind of, you know, I felt a little unease from that. And that's just a silly thing. That's just a feeling. We're not talking about facts here. But if you want to talk about something structural, something real, a criticism that I had was I didn't like the talk that Senator Paul gave on sanctions. And I also didn't like what he said about the war on radical Islam. Now, let me explain this. I disagree with him on sanctions, but I think that he really means it. I agree with him when he says radical Islam is a problem, but I don't think that he believes it. Now, here's what I mean when I say that. When he's talking about the issues of sanctions when it comes to Iran, there was a very tepid response from the audience. And you'll know that there were a lot of hardcore libertarians there, because when Ron Paul walked out, the audience went nuts, and they were very excited for him, which shows that there is a very strong libertarian bent amongst those people that were there. And a lot of conservatives gave Ron Paul his due as well. but when Rand Paul talked about sanctions, you know, he got a very tepid response. Go back and watch the tape. It's very fascinating. You can see the response there from the audience to Rand Paul's different talking points. Now, the thing is that when Rand Paul was talking about issuing sanctions against Iran, I believe that he really does want to do that. And that's not libertarian. And I don't agree with Rand Paul on issuing sanctions against Iran, because even though I think that sanctions aren't an act of war, I don't agree with Ron Paul on this, where, you know, and I'm sure that Ron Paul is probably grating, you know, biting his, you know, lip when he heard Rand saying this, because Ron Paul thinks that sanctions are an act of war. I don't think that they're an act of war, but I think they're a restriction against free trade in general. That doesn't mean that I think you ought to be able to sell Zyklon B to the Nazis, you know. But I think there is probably a middle ground. And what I mean by that is that if Rand Paul is going to be talking about sanctions, you know, he should be talking about free trade as well. You need to balance that out. And I think that there is a better way to, I think that there was a better way for Rand Paul to structure that message about being tough on Iran, which I certainly think that, you know, rhetorically, we do need to have some sort of bellicosity towards dictatorships, not hostility, but First Amendment bellicosity, meaning that we need to speak out against tyrannical regimes and dictatorships and authoritarianism. And so when Rand Paul was talking about sanctions on Iran, I felt like he ideologically believed that, which I disagree with, and I didn't care for. Now, when he talked about the enemy is radical Islam, he also got a tepid response from the audience on that point. And I think because libertarians, you know, tend to hate that kind of, it sounds like warmongering. I don't think that he's warmongering there. And here's why I say that, because when he was talking about war with radical Islam, I got the impression that Rand Paul didn't really mean it. Now, I can't know what's in his heart of hearts, but I am a very good reader of body language and of tonality. And I feel as if Rand Paul, when he was talking about war with radical Islam, was more doing it because he felt like he had to, which I also found disappointing because there are real reasons for us to oppose radical Islam. There are real libertarian reasons to speak out against radical Islam. There's a great story on the Libertarian Republic Today by Micah Fleck, where he's talking about how the left excoriates and expunges anyone who is critical on the left of radical Islam. Here are Ayaan Hirsi Ali, a victim of radical Islam, speaking out against it. And she's being run out. She's being ostracized by the left. So there is a problem with radical Islam, and I think that Rand Paul addressed it from the neocon perspective of the problem of fighting radical Islam, which I think we do have to do. But the weird thing was that I felt like Rand Paul's heart wasn't really in it. And in a way, I think it's a good thing, because I'm glad that Rand is not really bellicose about, you know, fighting a war with Iran or maybe getting involved with ISIS, you know, because, you know, in the past, when he talks about fighting ISIS, he's been very clever. He says, yeah, I think we need boots on the ground. We need Arab boots on the ground. We need Saudi Arabia boots on the ground. We need Jordanian boots on the ground, not necessarily American boots on the ground. And so he's made a very clever distinction there, which is why I think when he talks about, you know, war with radical Islam, he's being a bit obtuse, and he's obfuscating his position there, which I don't necessarily even think needs to happen. You know, maybe he doesn't want to sound like a warmonger, and maybe I would even sound like a warmonger when I talk about the problems of radical Islam and how we should be opposing ISIS vigorously. And so that is the problem, is that, you know, what really bothered me, you know, one was seeing all these, you know, conservatives swarming all over our guy and claiming him as their own. Fine. And two, from a substantive standpoint, I had the problem with him talking about sanctions without a good full-throated defense of free trade as well, which is very important. And three, I had a problem with the way that he delivered his rhetoric on radical Islam, because I felt like he really is more dovish. I do believe that he is more dovish on this, but if he's going to use that rhetoric, couch it in real terms. You know, talk about the real problem of ISIS beheading Christians. Talk about their barbarism and bloodthirstiness. You know, but the problem here is that, unfortunately, Rand Paul, as a Christian, he cannot go too far in attacking radical Islam. He has to couch it in the terms of a politician, because once you start to unload criticisms on Islam, eventually the problem, even Christians will start to get defensive, because the secular humanist in me is talking right now, because once you start to criticize religion from a religious standpoint, all religions are on the table. And of course, Senator Rand Paul is not going to do that as a Christian himself, and he's certainly not going to alienate his base. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen, you get to hear another standpoint from another libertarian perspective here. That's why I'm here doing this podcast with a blanket wrapped around my shoulders in my underwear, talking to y'all this morning. It's morning. I don't know what time it is when you're listening to this, but you know, today's being the 9th of April. I just got back from Kentucky, so still a little slow, but I know you guys wanted to hear what happened. And now I'd like to switch tactics from, you know, what I didn't like to something that's important. I want to talk about strategy with y'all, because I was approached by, you know, one guy from Tennessee, really cool guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I'll try and see if I can look it up for him, because he was really interesting. And he was like, you know, Austin, why are you saying nice things about Ted Cruz? And, you know, I had a conversation with a bunch of young guys and gals who came up to me and were like, you know, yeah, let's talk about Ted Cruz. And they came up to me with this notion. They said, I support Rand Paul or none at all. And what I mean is that these kids were basically saying, you know, oh, well, I support Rand Paul, but if he doesn't win, I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson in the Libertarian Party. And I'm like, shh, don't say that. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And we started chatting, and I'm going to reveal a little bit of strategy here to you, ladies and gentlemen, because, and you know, this is the kind of thing that, you know, can get people in trouble if you talk about this in public, but it's something that you need to know and understand and internalize. And if you're one of those freedom fighters out there, one of those libertarian mercenaries who is working within the Republican Party and wants Rand Paul to win, you have to internalize this strategy. You absolutely cannot say that you would not vote for the Republican nominee, okay? Now, this is not selling out, okay? And I posted this on my Facebook yesterday, and most people didn't know what I was talking about. Lie to neocons because they lie to you. What do I mean when I say that? Even if you are going to vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, if Rand Paul doesn't win, don't say that. Don't say that. Why? Because then hardcore Republicans aren't going to support Rand Paul, and they're going to look at us as an outsider movement rather than than the insurgency that we really need to be. They're going to see us as insurgents, and we need them to look at us as friends, as allies, and colleagues. And we will be as long as Rand Paul is the nominee. But the problem is that too many of us libertarians are going into these Republican meetings and saying, Rand Paul or none at all. That's the wrong strategy. You have to be Republican. You have to be GOP. RNC, GOP, you know, no matter what, a stalwart Republican. So that's why I like to say sometimes, and not just, this isn't the only reason why I like to say I like Ted Cruz. There are plenty of good reasons to say that Ted Cruz is good on a lot of things. Now, how can you not get all excited and, you know, hot and bothered when Ted Cruz says he wants to eliminate the IRS? I can't not get excited for a candidate like that. I mean, this isn't like Mike Huckabee or Jeb Bush or something like that. This isn't like Bush Light here. You know, this is Ted Cruz. You know, he's a radical. He shut down the government, you know, so lay off him a little bit, libertarians. But what I like to say is that, you know, Republicans will sometimes couch a criticism of a libertarian. They'll say, oh, you won't support the Republican. Oh, well, what if Rand Paul doesn't win? Who would you support? So I like to say Ted Cruz. Let me play this conversation for you that I had with these kids out in Louisville and let you hear their thoughts about this strategy, and then we'll wrap it up on the back end.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Austin Peterson here from the LibertarianRepublic.com. We're doing the Freedom Report podcast from Senator Rand Paul's announcement for President of the United States, and I've got a big bunch of Rand Paul supporters, a bunch of cool people here, a bunch of real libertarians. There's a bunch of freaking neocons running around here acting like they know Rand Paul, but they don't know our bro like we know our bro. You know? All right, so listen. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the strategy for how Rand Paul can actually win the presidency of the United States. And I've got some friends here. They were talking earlier about saying, hey, when the mainstream media said, hey, who would you support for president? What did you guys say?
We said, nobody or Gary Johnson.
Wait, what did you say?
That's what I said, Gary Johnson.
So you guys were all saying Gary Johnson, right?
Right.
But here's the thing. I just said this to you a couple minutes ago, so I'm just going to say it again for the podcast audience. Lie to him. Tell the Republicans that you would support another Republican. Pick any Republican that you like. But what you cannot do is tell the Republican Party that you will drop out if it's not Rand, because then they won't support Rand. They will see us as insurgents rather than buddies. And even though we are insurgents, even though we are revolutionaries and rebels, we cannot come under flying the rebel flag. We've got to come in, you know, all Americans supporting Rand Paul, because all of these people, none of them were there when Ron Paul was running for president. You know, I mean, I don't know. Did you guys all support Ron?
I was in Iowa. I was in Nevada. We were supporting him on the campaign trail.
So these are real Ron Paulers here, ladies and gentlemen. And I mean, tell me, what did you think of Senator Rand Paul's speech today?
For the most part, I thought it was good. As a libertarian, we really can see what he's doing. We can see the game he's playing. He's walking a very, very fine line. And the big obstacle is the Republican primary. So we know, to a certain extent, he has to tailor the message in order to garner that vote. But there were a few points that I wish he hadn't made, one being the sanctions on Iran. But at the end of the day, I know that the apple does not fall far from the tree, and that his views on foreign policy are much, much better than any other candidate.
Now, let's be honest here, ladies and gentlemen. When we saw Rand Paul talking about sanctions from Iran, which is not libertarian, Ron Paul wasn't clapping.
No, Ron Paul wasn't. Ron Paul was kind of just
looking down,
and he was, he had his hands in his lap, and he was not looking very pleased.
Do you think Rand's playing the game?
Probably.
If he's not, then I'm hoping his dad, like, knocks some sense into him.
Keep him in line, Ron. Keep him in line. So are you guys getting involved with your local Republican parties? Are you guys going to try and become delegates to the national convention?
I was actually chosen as a delegate for District 1 in Ohio for Ron Paul. Of course, he had to win the popular vote, which he did not. But, yeah, I would like to try to do that again and be there for the grassroots effort in whatever way is possible.
Great. What do you guys think about his chances?
I think he is by far the most likely to win. I fully 100% believe that he's got what it takes to win.
And are there any other Republican candidates that you support?
Well, if
that's it. See, ladies and gentlemen, you got to get the strategy down. You know what? A lot of people, because the problem with libertarians is I think we want to be honest. You know.
Yes.
We want to tell people the truth. But here's why I think it's okay to lie to some of these people. Because they'll lie to you. If somebody's willing to stab you in the back, and somebody's willing to do anything they can to win or get ahead, it's not immoral to win. It's not immoral to beat those people and to use the same tactics against them. Now, if somebody's done no harm to you and they've done nothing wrong to you, you know, I think it's wrong to lie to them. But when we're talking about politics and somebody says, who else would you support for Rand Paul? I think it's wise to say Ted Cruz or whoever your candidate is.
And to be honest, Ted Cruz isn't necessarily a bad candidate. He's just not my first choice. And if Ted Cruz really did win the nomination, I would probably vote for him.
Do you want to say something?
I wouldn't go that far. I actually have relatives in Wisconsin, so Scott Walker would be my second choice if I had to pick another Republican. But I don't know. Ted Cruz is a nice guy, but I don't know he's a great candidate.
Well, I was up in a bloggers convention because I'm an education blogger and writer. And I was up there, and they were talking about school choice and what Walker was doing in Wisconsin. And I was really pleased with what I saw.
If you can stand up to the unions, I mean, that's something to note.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. All right, so who's going to be Rand Paul's VP?
I'm up for it.
All right. What's your name?
Aaron Gillum.
Aaron Gillum. Yep. All right. Aaron Gillum, vice president. So it's Paul Gillum 2016, I guess. Yeah.
So what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Is that the right strategy to do it? Do you think it's ever moral to lie to someone if they lie to you? I think so. I think that if someone lies to you and is deceitful to you and doesn't trust you and treats you like you are their inferior, that you have every right to do it right back. I don't think that you necessarily should engage in what the neocons engage in, which is I like to call the noble lie. You're going to tell a lie first off. I think that you should always try and be just and virtuous and moral and ethical. Treat people the way that you want to be treated. But just remember, when someone doesn't treat you the way that you want to be treated, you can be like the porcupine. Don't tread on me. You know, if you're being stepped on, you have every right to deceive back. And this is why I make the case, and a lot of libertarians don't like when I do this, but the truth is, this is why I make the case that I think it's okay to spy on like foreign leaders and spy on foreign governments for the CIA to do that actual job. And the reason why is because they spy on us. They spy on us. So, you know, it's just like if someone pulled a gun on you, you know, you'd have a right to pull a gun on them back. So what I'm saying here is when it comes to the art of lying in politics, if someone is lying to you, you have every right to lie back. So even if you support Rand Paul and no one else and would vote for Gary Johnson, don't say it, okay? Don't go to your local county Republican meeting and say Rand Paul or none at all. Say I'm voting GOP, Rand Paul's my guy, but I also kind of like Ted Cruz. Maybe Scott Walker, you know, whoever your sellout is. Have your sellout, your backup sellout in case, your sellout backup in case, so that you can be ready to take over the Republican Party. So, I hope you enjoyed the show today, ladies and gentlemen. A good heartfelt analysis of the breakdowns with a little bit of salt in there so you guys can know exactly how I feel. I like Rand Paul. I think he's the best guy for the job, but we're going to keep him honest. You know, I don't work for the campaign, get no money from the campaign, and I want to give you guys the straight talk, no BS, because I care about the principles, not politicians. I'm here to talk about, and I don't care about parties. Remember, I care about ideas. So, if you enjoy the podcast today, do me a favor. Subscribe to me on iTunes. It's the Freedom Report. You can also find us on the Android app, Stitcher. So, if you don't have an Apple device, you can download the Android app, Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com. Subscribe to the Freedom Report podcast. You'll get one every single time one is uploaded. If you really enjoy the show, folks, and you want to do me a big favor, go right now to iTunes. You can go to the Freedom Report and leave us a 5-star review. If you leave us a written review, that even does better for us to help us spread the message. And I sincerely appreciate you guys being loyal listeners. Don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.com.